This is Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, and we're talking about extending your growing season today. Diana Allthwaite is back with us. She's a retired UW Extension Horticulture Outreach Specialist for Pierce County. How can we help you with your gardening questions? We're ready for anything. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Hey, Diana, good to see you.
Hi, Jill. Nice to be back.
So I heard on WPR this morning that there was a frost watch up in the northern part of the state. Is that something you have experienced with up there?
It's a little comical because when, like, your introduction, you introduced me as from the northern part of the state, but you guys down in Madison think we're north, but actually we're central. So we're right west of the central part of the state. So I'm really west central, and there's a whole lot of north of me that we around here considered north.
That's funny.
So yeah, it is a little funny, but no, that was nowhere near me.
Okay.
So that was more in the north central part of the state. And I saw that on the weather maps last night, and I'm like, what's that box up there? And I came to find out that it was a frost watch or warning or whatever. And that was kind of surprising.
That's pretty early, right? We're only at the end of August here. So,
right. But Monday is September, and that's supposedly the meteorological start of fall. And I was walking my dog the other day, looking at the vast number of cornfields in my view, and it dawned on me that in a month that corn is going to be all like yellow and drying up, and the trees will be changing, because it's usually the first weekend of October where we have peak fall color in our area. And that's only 5 weeks away. And think of how fast the last 5 weeks have gone. So, I mean, it's crazy how fast summer has gone.
It really, really is. And all my former friends, because I'm going to drop them soon on Facebook, is mentioning how close Halloween and Christmas is getting. Like I said, they're former friends. Anyway, so this is kind of appropriate that we're talking about extending our growing season. What are some of the options that gardeners have to eke out as much as we can in our garden?
That's a great way to look at it, because, really every year seems to have its own challenges. And every year we're sitting here at this time going, oh, it's been a tough growing season.
Because that's what we do.
It has been. And I'm actually, I know some people are going to disagree with me, but I've decided summer's kind of overrated, because with all of the heat and humidity and rain that we've had this summer, it's been kind of a crummy summer to not just garden and grow things, but to be out there and enjoying it, because the weather just hasn't been nice. So I, for one, am happy for this cool down. And actually, I haven't heard of anyone complaining about the heat and humidity going back, but it did affect our gardens. And because we've had, several weird years in a row, it's kind of hard to say exactly what to be doing at this time of year in the garden, because we don't know what the next 2 months will bring weather-wise. So, your term of eking out the garden is really a good first way to look at it. And that is to, right now we have tons of tomatoes producing, we have cucumbers producing, we have beans producing, we have peppers producing. And so one of the best approaches is to just keep those plants producing, because you can't replant fruit forming things at this stage, even down in your southern part of the state. But if you keep things harvested, they will keep producing. So, a plant's goal is to reproduce. And so if it produces fruit and those seeds mature on the plant, that sends signals to the plant that, hey, I've done my reproduction, I can stop trying and I can die, because our vegetable plants are almost all annuals, right? So if you keep harvesting things before they over mature on the plant, that plant will keep producing some. So beans, if you still got beans going, you can keep them going for quite a while yet. And tomatoes, it's, you know, most likely your all of your tomato fruits that you're going to get this year have already formed. They may still be green, but they've already formed on the plants. But keeping things harvested not only is going to keep that plant thinking, oh, I got to keep working at this reproduction thing, but what you don't want to do is get a buildup of rotting fruits in your garden, because that draws in a variety of different pests that can damage the stuff that's still good. Okay, whether it's insects that come, you know, for like picnic beetles and such that come for the rotting tomatoes, or voles or chipmunks or whatever that come and eat those over mature beans, and then they say, oh, there's a pepper. Well, let's take a bite of that too. So keeping things harvested that you have, keeping things going is your first step.
And clean up around the plants, I would imagine, is important.
Well, and you know, if your garden's anything like mine right now, there are some plants that are hard to see because of the weeds that have been allowed to grow because it was 95 and humid and, you know, just not pleasant to be out there weeding.
Sure.
I know people have very nicely, neatly weeded gardens, but if you have weeds growing in the garden, it's not only important to clean up your produce and your excess fruits and stuff, but now is really the time to get those weeds out of there if they're big and they're setting seed, because all of those seeds are going to be weeds for you to pull next year. So like in my garden, one of my weed problems is foxtail. I get a lot of foxtail that wants to grow in there, and those seeds are up there right now, and they will, when they're mature, they will just poof and shoot the seeds out like 15 feet and boom, they're gone. Well, you know, one foxtail plant can produce thousands and thousands and thousands of seeds, and those seeds can remain viable for 10, 20 years in the soil. So it's really important, even if you don't have the time or effort or energy to go out there and pull those big weeds, try to clip off those seed heads and get them out of there. So if you have a string trimmer, a weed whacker, you can just go up, high and whack those seed heads off, try to pull them out of the garden so that they don't continue to mature and be in there. At this time, some of those have such big root systems that if you pull them and it's close to a tomato or pepper or onion, it's going to pull that tomato or pepper or onion up as well. So in that case, it's better to just clip them off above ground and get them out of there and try to prevent the weed seeds from maturing in your garden.
What do you do with those seed heads?
Great question. So you don't really want to just throw them on a cold compost pile because they can remain viable. You can, if you have an area where you do a little bit of burning of cleanup and stuff, you can burn them. You can bury them really deep. So dig a foot and a half deep hole and throw them down in there. They're going to end up rotting because they are not seeing daylight. They won't germinate. Or if you don't have a whole lot of them, you know, you could probably tuck them in your garbage and send them off, even though you're not supposed to do that in most places.
Yeah.
And if you hot compost, if you have do a serious composting where you, you know, get your pile heated up to 140 degrees and you stir it regularly and stuff, that will kill most weed seeds. So that's another way you can deal with them.
So what are some of the vegetables that are going to stand up to a little bit of a light frost that we don't have to worry about too much?
Yeah, so that's the other part of it. So beyond keeping what you have going, another thing is, well, what can you plant? Because, you know, in some cases, maybe your beans are done, your peas are most likely definitely done, and now you've got that open space in your garden and you want to make use of it. So it is kind of late, even in the southern part of the state, to plant anything that produces fruits like tomatoes or beans or peppers, that kind of a thing. And those are warm season crops. And we're going to be getting, even if we don't get frost, the temperatures are going to be cooler, the days are shorter, and those warm season crops just aren't happy with that. So look for the cool season things. So the things that you plant early in the spring, if you have transplants that you maybe started from seed earlier, or there are some greenhouses that have cool season vegetable transplants out there, like broccoli and small cabbages and stuff like that, you can still put those in. And here's the challenge, right? Think of like last year and the year before, I think, how late fall went, right? So up in our area, we didn't get our first frost until way past average first frost date. And we just don't know what's going to happen, you know, with climate change and our warming winters and stuff. The last couple of winters just haven't been so horribly, brutally cold. And we haven't had snow on the ground till January. We don't know. So it's kind of up to you on what kind of chance you want to take, because there are some things that can handle cool temperatures, some things that can handle light frost, some things that can handle heavier frost. So if you're willing to take a chance on those more tender things, you could do those too. But if you have transplants, you can still put those in. Otherwise, start looking at things that where we eat like the leaves. Okay. So you can still plant all kinds of lettuces. You can plant spinach. You can plant beets, because even though you might not get you might get little beets, baby beets, but you can eat the beet tops. You can eat chard. Radishes are one that you could do. If you like radishes, they grow so fast and are ready for harvest so quickly that you can just keep doing those. And one of the great options is plant some this week, plant some next week, plant some next week, and then you can have harvest going for a long time and really extend that season. And like I said, we don't know for sure when we're going to get snow cover, but those cool season plants can handle light frost. Some of them can handle heavier frost and even freezing temperatures. And in some cases, things like the greens can actually taste better if they get some of that cold. It makes them sweeter.
Yeah, there's a number of plants that are like that, that they taste better when it gets cold.
Right. And like Brussels sprouts, if you've grown Brussels sprouts and they're standing in your garden, you want those to get some of that cold temperature, because those definitely taste better after they've had some light frost.
Yes.
And that concentrates some sugars in there.
For sure. We're talking with Diana Althwith today. She is a retired UW Extension Horticulture Outreach Specialist for Pierce County, which is not all the way up north. If you've got a question for her, give us a call. 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau in for Larry today. Join us on Monday. We're going to take a look back on two shows that Larry did. The first one, we're going to talk about nature after dark, and then we're going to do a deep dive into the Great Lakes. Hope you can join us then. Right now, we are talking about gardening, and we've got a lot of callers right now, Diana, so let's get to them right away. Bob in Madison has a comment. Go right ahead, Bob.
Yeah, thank you, Jill. And I appreciate that Diana's reminding me about my healthy crop of foxtail in my garden. I want to point out that it is never appropriate to burn trash or yard waste in Wisconsin. Wisconsin law prohibits burning anything but clean wood and paper. And the reason for that, of course, is air pollution. And we need to be mindful of our friends and neighbors who suffer from pulmonary diseases like asthma. So the weed seeds should be put in the trash, never burned.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. What do you think, Diana?
Well, that's a really, really good point. And especially if you're in an urban area.
Yes.
And there will be ordinances and stuff like that. And maybe I'm a you know, looking at it a little different because I live out in the middle of the country, and if we are burning, you know, some branches or brush or whatever and throw a few weed seeds on there, it's not likely going to cause any problems in that. So it's a really good point. You do need to be mindful. And as I said, burning is where it's allowed and where it's feasible, but there are limits on what you can and should burn, and certainly always be compassionate and aware of your neighbors, and don't annoy them with smoky burning.
Don't annoy your neighbors. That's just a good thing to listen to. Well, and there are times of the year that prairies are burned, and so you're obviously doing the same thing, and it's good for prairies. So there are places and times where it can be appropriate, but you're right. Be aware of your neighbors.
And, you know, if it's a handful of foxtail weed seeds, that's one thing, but you don't want a big, massive, stinky pile going.
All right. Well, let's go back to the phone. We've got Dave in Appleton with a question. Go right ahead, Dave.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, so I've got a question on planting seeds, both vegetables, flowers, now or later in the fall for next year. I know you can, they wait until next spring. They overwinter. That's what helps them, the wildflowers and such, to produce another flower. But what about the ones you buy in the store? Can I buy from the store now and put them in either just before the first frost or after the frost and let them freeze? Will they come up next year?
Dave, are you talking about flowers or vegetables?
Both.
Okay.
So with vegetables, there's not really anything that you can plant now that's going to stay as a seed over winter and grow next year. Having said that, one of my biggest spring weeds in my garden this year was tomatoes.
Oh yeah, true.
Because I didn't clean up all of my cherry tomatoes off the plants last year, and they just went to the ground and they were sprouting like crazy. So obviously those seeds made it through winter, but you can't count on that. And but with flowers, like wildflower seeds and stuff, yes, you can. And the ones that are in the store, if they're already in the package, unless it says something specifically on them about needing cold treatment, they should have had all of the treatments they need to grow. Okay, so always read your package. The key to that is it's late now for summer seeding. So like a lot of times, one of the best times to, like the best times to plant prairies and stuff are July and August, because those little seedlings germinate and they get up big enough, they get enough of a root system then to get them through winter. So it's too late for that now, but you can do, sometimes it's called frost seeding, but once the soil gets colder, because the key is you don't want those seeds to germinate this year, and it's too warm yet, the soil's too warm. If you put the seeds out there now, they will sprout, but then those little seedlings are too young and they're not likely to make it through the winter very well. So the time to do that, depending on where you are in the state, is more like in October sometime, once the soil temperature is getting cooler, and that will discourage any seeds from sprouting. Some people wait until after there's like everything is dead with multiple heavy freezes. And then you can also, even in certain circumstances, put them on the snow. And then when the snow melts, it's kind of sucks those seeds down to the soil and gets good seed to soil contact. And then they will germinate when the soil and air temperatures and day length are appropriate next year. With prairie plants that are typically warm season plants, they'll be germinating in June next year. So that is a viable way to do it. But you need to wait another 6 weeks at least, depending on what the weather's doing and how quickly the soil cools down.
And every seed is different. So you really kind of need to know what you're planting. So do your research, Dave. Thanks for the call. Next up, we have Mark in Hatchville. Go ahead, Mark.
Hi, a fellow West Wisconsinite. I did not get very many peas this spring, and I'm wondering if I could still plant peas because I understand they like the cold. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
It's actually a little too late for that because even though they like the cool temperatures, they're going to take, 8 weeks before they're blossoming and starting to send pea pods. So in Western Wisconsin, it's too late to be planting peas.
All right, get that in there early next year. Aaron in Hartford emailed us, is there a list of good perennial vegetables or reseeders that would come back every year? For example, asparagus.
So we have really two perennial vegetables, asparagus and rhubarb. Asparagus does reseed itself, but really you want to plant that from roots. And fall is a great time to be planting them, or transplanting them, I should say. Otherwise, in spring, same with rhubarb. If you want to transplant or divide it, fall is a great time. You can start doing that pretty much any time now. If we're done with that hot weather, they will have time to get the roots established in the warmer soil. Otherwise, you can do transplanting and dividing in spring as well, just as the growth is starting. But there aren't really any vegetable seeds to put in now that will come back next year. Having said that, now is the time you should be getting ready to plant garlic. So garlic is something that is planted usually, again, after the soil is cooling down because we don't want it really growing now. But now's the time to be shopping and buying your garlic seed stock in order to put that in, usually in October, again, kind of watching the weather. And what will happen is you plant that garlic and we don't want top growth, but the soil will be warm enough that there will be little roots coming out of those bulbs, just like with tulips or daffodils or any of the other spring flower bulbs that we do. They'll do some root growth. They'll get the cold treatment because those bulbs need cold in order to bulb out next year. That's why we don't plant garlic in spring, because it doesn't get that cold treatment. And so you don't really get the bulbs to fill out if you wait until spring. And so that's something that we could be planting this fall that you'll harvest then next year in July, probably.
Okay, thanks, Aaron. We'll go back to the phones now. Todd in DePere, what question do you have for us?
Hi, I don't know if you can help me out or not, but I have a question about nut trees, specifically a northern pecan and a Carpathian walnut. They were bought from a state local nursery that's well known. The pecan tree is about, I had a few of them, but most of them died. But I have one that's about 25 years old and does not produce nuts. So I bought a smaller sapling that's about 4 or 5 years old now, and to see if it needed a second tree. And then I have about three, I believe they're called Carpathian walnuts that are about 8 years old. Very bushy, very vibrant, but no nuts. So I'm just wondering, am I going to get any nuts on these trees?
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. So one of the things with nut trees is, and those nut trees, is the tree may be cold hardy and able to handle the winters and the cold temperatures just fine, but they might bloom early in the spring and then the blossoms and the pollen and stuff is killed by late spring frost, and then they don't produce nuts. So butternuts are a native tree. I've got some on my land yet that haven't died from butternut canker, but that's a separate thing. But even with that, they only actually produce a nut crop every 5-6 years because we don't get a cold freeze after they start blooming. So I'm suspicious. I'm not really familiar with either of those trees because, as you say, they're not very common around here. But I'm suspicious that that's what's going on, is that you're not getting pollination because either they're in bloom and the insects aren't, I'm not sure if they're wind pollinated or insect pollinated, quite honestly, but either that or the cool spring temperatures are just not letting those blossoms get pollinated and produce nuts. So again, not real familiar with them, but off the top of my head, that's my suspicion.
Todd, do you actually see any blooms in the spring?
I look at them, and I don't see anything that I can distinguish as a flower or a bloom, really. Just, you know, new shoots of leaves and branches, but nothing that I can see that's a flower.
Mm-hmm. So then it could very well be the case is that they're freezing before they get a chance to even blossom out. Would he be seeing, like, the little buds right now, Diana?
You know, there should be, quote, flower buds on it. Now, they're not likely going to get big showy flowers.
No.
And so that makes me think that maybe they're wind pollinated rather than insect pollinated. But I think they bloom early, and that is too early for us. So, again, you know, I can't say for absolute sure because I don't have any experience with them, but that's my suspicion. It's kind of like apricots are the same way, at least in our area, where you expect apricot fruits like once every 4 or 5 years because they bloom just a little too early and then the cold spring damages them. So that may be why pecans are a southern thing.
Yeah. Well, good luck, Todd. Maybe we'll have a nice warm spring at some point and you'll get some. That would be wonderful. Now let's go to another Todd in Fond du Lac. What's your question, Todd?
Yeah. I tried to plant parsnip seeds, and I'm just wondering if I can get any advice on what's the best method of doing that.
Have you planted parsnips before, Diana?
No, I'm not a parsnip fan, but
it's a small crop.
Yeah, and you know, they are we grow them for the root, and they aren't hard to plant. You put them typically in the soil right away in spring. They do need a pretty long growing season to form that root, so usually early spring. You know, like in the South, they can plant them and they overwinter in the ground, but here they're most likely going to freeze out and rot over winter. So they shouldn't be hard to grow. I know we've grown them in our, when I worked with our master gardeners, we grew them in our demonstration garden and stuff. And the seeds are relatively big, so you plant them about a half an inch deep, you know, and just like any other seed, it takes a while, you know, a week or two, and they should germinate. And you should be digging parsnips about now. So there's nothing tricky about them.
What problems are you having, Todd?
I just planted them about 10 days ago. I thought I'd try it and then mulch them heavy in the fall and see if that would work.
Okay.
Don't know.
Great experiment. Good for you. I love when people experiment with things like that. And again, especially given our changing climate and changing growing conditions and stuff. So like I said, in the South, they do plant them in the fall and then they grow over winter and stuff, and then they're harvested in the spring. So what you should do is if you just planted them, they're going to sprout and they're going to get leaves. And so those leaves need to do as much photosynthesis as they can and soak up the sun and create energy to be growing that root system. And then once, you know, freezing starts, they can handle some cold. But once the leaves turn from green to either yellow or brown or whatever, and the soil temperature is getting down there and starts, it's kind of ideally you start getting a little frost layer on top of the soil. That's when you put the mulch on them, because what you're trying to do, you don't want to mulch them too early, because if the soil's too warm, they can just rot in there. So you want them to almost be like in the refrigerator, okay? So you want that soil temperature down, and then you mulch it to keep that soil temperature down. And then you take that mulch off in spring once the snow is melting, and then they'll start sprouting when they're ready. And then they'll be doing some more growing. So that's a great experiment for you to try. I don't think a lot of people do it, but I'm sure some people do. We'll probably get calls from people that do that all the time, right? But it, you know, theoretically it should work. So, yeah. Good luck.
Well, let us know, Todd. I'm actually very curious to find out if that's going to work or not. So I love it. We are talking with Diana Alfwith. She is a retired UW Extension Horticulture Outreach Specialist for Pierce County. If you have a question for her, give us a call, 800-642-1234. And of course, you can send an email, and that address is talk@wpr.org. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau. Hope you can join us again next week. We're going to check in with Neil DeBole about prairie gardening, and we'll also talk about invasive garden plants, including one that just started to creep into the state. So right now we are talking about general gardening, and Diana, we've got a call from Kim in River Falls who grows parsnips. Yay! Go ahead, Kim.
I knew there would be.
Yeah, I grew them when we lived in Stanley, Wisconsin, and I did lasagna gardening that year, and I planted them in the spring, and then they grew all summer, and I covered them, and I dug them in the following spring, and they were too big to use, really. But so I think if I had dug them in the fall, they would have been good.
Okay. Well,
there you go. See, so it's easy to get them through winter, apparently, as long as you give them the care they want.
I don't know if I'd say easy, Diana. You can do it. Put it that way.
It's possible.
It's possible. There you go. Thank you, Kim. We got another Kim in Sauk City. Go right ahead. Kim, are you there? Oh, I think we're having a little bit of problems, but apparently she's having, or he, I'm not sure, yellow leaves on raspberries, and was wondering what the issue could be.
Could be lots of different things. And at this time of year, I tend to not worry about it because we are late in the season. And so that might be a cane that has done its production. If it's a floricane and done its, you know, produced its berries and stuff, it may already be thinking about giving it up for the year. And it's really hard to find a plant that doesn't have some kind of spots or holes or whatever by this time of year. And usually it's not anything serious to worry about. Mm-hmm. So, but there are lots of things that can cause yellow leaves. So without, you know, really digging into that one, it's going to be hard to diagnose.
So there's two different ways she can go. She can send something to PJ Leash. She can send something to Brian Huddleston.
She could. If it's just, you know, like leaves turning yellow, maybe getting some spots on them and stuff, it's probably a surface fungus thing. If this is something that's been going on all year, then I would be more concerned about it. And you're absolutely right. The way, you know, it could be one of a bunch of different fungi. And so the way to find out for sure would be to send a sample into the disease diagnostics clinic and Dr. Brian Huddleston and test for something. Mm-hmm. Like I said, if it's something right now, because there's, you know, like stress trees and shrubs are starting to change color. There's a lot of foliar fungal diseases that have bothered the leaves long enough. And the plants are just saying, okay, I'm going to stop fighting the battle and just start going dormant for winter because they know the days are getting shorter and stuff. So if it's something like that, I wouldn't worry about it. But if it's something that's been going on throughout the summer, it's definitely worth exploring, and sending a sample in is the best way.
Okay. Do you have any gardening questions for Diana? Give us a call. We have open lines, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Vita from Chicago emailed us. She has planted spinach seeds first week of September. They germinate and are small, but some years with no cover and last year under a net hoop, they began growing again in the spring and have large edible leaves way before spring planting. She also plants lamb's lettuce, which is called macho, with similar results through her macho, I believe, is never very big, but very tasty in green salads.
And she is definitely south for all of us, right? Chicago. And that little extra warmth, the more of that you get, obviously, the more you can get these things through. But some of these plants, again, they are either like a biennial naturally. So they grow the first year from seed and they do make it through winter and then they'll come back the next year and you can get some good harvest on it. The other thing that she mentioned though is like row covers. And that's something we haven't really mentioned, to extending the season. So as we get into the fall here and temperatures start getting cooler, as I said earlier, it's not always just frost, but cool nights. And that's the same thing with spring. You know, if you plant your warm season plants out too early, even though they don't freeze, they don't like that. So planting tomatoes too early is a great way to get blossom end rot, because those plants are not growing right when the soil temperature is cold and the night temperatures are cool. But in the fall, you can extend with, you know, the covering the tomatoes when the freeze comes and that. So you can protect for at least a few degrees of frost or freeze, but keep in mind that those cooler temperatures do affect the ripening and the sugar content in those ripening plants. And so they do start to taste a little different. So a ripe tomato in July tastes way different than the same variety of ripe tomato in late September. And that's just because the sugars don't form the same way when the temperatures are cooler. But that doesn't mean you can't still make sauce, and you know, a BLT is good any time of year, right? And they're still going to be better than store-bought.
So, yes.
So you can create, you know, people get very, very creative with season extension hoops and structures and stuff. Some people will start putting like little battery powered heaters in their little tents to, you know, keep things going a little bit longer. And especially those leafy greens like lettuce and spinach, like the that person mentioned, they can still grow and produce in quite cool temperatures. And so you may as well plant them. You know, those seeds aren't overly expensive for a pack of lettuce and or spinach. And again, we don't know when we're really going to get cold. So you could be eating homegrown spinach easily at Thanksgiving.
Sure.
Covers are a good thing. The other thing that you can do is plant things in containers. So if you have a relatively big pot, you can plant those spinach and lettuce seeds in there, keep it out in the full sun all during the day, but you can, you know, move it inside during the cold nights to protect it and keep it from getting super cold. And you can keep a garden going that way. And then also plan for stuff to come in. So herbs and leafy greens, if you plant them in containers and you have them outside now, you can bring them inside once it does get too cold outside, get them under lights and keep them going. You know, they may not be as pretty as they are outside, but, you know, rosemary still tastes the same. Oregano and some of the other herbs and stuff. My brother and lots of people I know have kept their herbs going all through winter with a little supplemental lighting. And like I said, they may not look as great, but they still have all the great flavor and,
sure,
and cooking uses.
I've had good luck with pretty much everything but rosemary. Oh, that's a hard one.
It is. Rosemary, when it comes in, is very susceptible to spider mites.
Yeah.
And so I've had a lot of rosemaries die indoors from spider mites. So yeah, that's something that you need to be aware of and protect against.
Okay. Well, let's go to Randy in La Crosse, and he's got a question. Go ahead, Randy.
Hi. I have a Alba rose. It's a once blooming old garden rose that I've had that I planted in 1992 when I lived in Eau Claire. And then I moved to Viroqua. I dug it up and transplanted it there. And then I've been in La Crosse the last 12 years. And I dug it up and moved it there, too. So it's really tough, a tough rose. Blooms, they're real florific in the spring. But the last couple of years, it's been putting out shoots that are kind of a lighter colored, and they're kind of more variegated looking, and they're from the actual rose plant. It's not a weed, but something is happening to this plant, and I don't know what to do about it. I cut it way down this spring, thinking that new shoots would come up and new healthier shoots, but it's continuing to shoot up these, and it didn't flower, and it's just looking punky, and I don't know what to do about it. The only thing I'm suspecting is it's on a fence line, and right across the fence they have a whole bunch of buckthorn and different kinds of invasive plants like that grow up like little trees and weeds, and they cut them down, but I'm just wondering if there's something with the root competition that's stealing the nutrients, or if you have any thoughts.
Yeah, so Alba, that has kind of burgundy-ish leaves on it, doesn't it? And then the little pink flowers?
It has pink flowers. It's like it's a darker colored, a darker colored leaf, but a normal rose colored leaf, yes.
Yeah, so that is one that it should be on its own rootstock. So it's not that you're getting a shoot from the rootstock, likely. My suspicion is that maybe you have a virus in there. So if it's getting variegated leaves, without seeing a picture, it might be some kind of a model or mosaic pattern or something going on those leaves. And you said it's kind of punky, assuming you have it in full sun again, because you know how to grow roses. I wonder if there's not something like that going on. So that's one where I would take one of those canes with the variegated leaves and send it to the disease diagnostics clinic, to Brian Huddleston, and get it tested to see if there's a virus or something in there that's goofing that up. And then because you cannot cure a virus, you can't cure a virus out of a plant. It's really a thing of removing the plant and getting it out of the system. It's going to come back every year with the same symptoms. So it shouldn't be anything to do with competition from other plants. If there was an herbicide drift coming in and stuff, that can cause some funky growth and weird things sometimes. It really makes me suspicious that maybe you have a virus.
Oh, well, hopefully not, Randy, but good luck with that either way. That's really discouraging when that happens and you've got a favorite plant. So let's go to Kathy in Black Creek. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hello. I've been starting some hollyhocks from seed. This is my first time. I would really like to have hollyhocks. I started the seeds. Excuse me. In a pot on my patio, and they've grown with some leaves, and the plants are about 6 inches tall, and suddenly the leaves are starting to turn yellow, and they have little holes all over the leaves. I don't know what's happening.
So hollyhocks get a disease called hollyhock rust. And that can be it's a fungal thing that gets on the leaves. It causes little specks, and then those specks fall out, and that creates the holes in the leaves. So you may have had some hollyhock rust disease going in there, which is not anything you can do about now, but fungal diseases need to be treated with a fungicide before the symptoms appear, because fungicides are preventatives. They're not cures. So the thing to do is to not worry about it too much. The roots, it doesn't affect the roots of the plants. Okay. And you you know, the recommendations are always to use resistant varieties because there are some varieties that are more resistant than others. The thing with hollyhocks is they are not always super perennial. So some of them act perennial, but if you have a hollyhock patch, a lot of that is reseeding of and new plants growing up in there. So what I would do is not worry about it too much. Let those leaves just run their course this fall. But you know that you have a susceptible variety. So next year, if you're planting, once they start growing up, research hollyhock rust and what kind of fungicide treatments you would need to do to prevent that. And, you know, again, it was a rainy year, even though you had them in pots and stuff. There was a lot of humidity and stuff. And so it's a bad year for fungus. And you might not have it as bad in other years, but it is a problem with hollyhocks and a reason that a lot of people don't grow hollyhocks.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that question, Kathy. Hopefully you'll be able to get some more. It seems like they're hard to establish, but once they're established, they usually do pretty well. Does that tend to be your experience?
Right. And, you know, they do get that lacy appearance on the leaves, but they'll still bloom and they'll still get you the big, big blossoms. So, you know, by this time in the year, you know, those leaves are starting to shrivel up and die kind of a thing. But again, you know, I've seen some absolutely gorgeous hollyhock patches. And, you know, it is a plant that's really got a lot of impact in a big mass. And they do seed themselves. So make sure that you know how to recognize a hollyhock seedling so that you don't pull them thinking they're weed.
There you go. And they do really great against like walls of barns mm-hmm. with self-facing,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, they do great there.
Very picturesque.
So Sandy in Eau Claire emailed us. She said that she's had so-so success with her first go at gardening in raised bed containers. She's wondering if you have any suggestions and would you recommend the netting systems that are available? She's gotten mixed reviews from people, but the squash bugs really loved her zucchini this year.
Oh, yeah. So raised beds, sometimes they do, when you first fill them, depending on what you fill them with, they take a while for that soil to kind of decompose and work itself out and stuff. So it kind of depends on what you use to fill them. Sometimes people use like a lasagna method where they fill it with a lot of layers of organic stuff, you know, put branches down in the bottom, that sort of thing. But that's a lot of organic matter to be breaking down. And that uses that's a high carbon content. And so that can affect how much nitrogen is available to the plants. Raised beds also do dry out faster than an in-ground garden. So you have to really monitor the moisture content of your raised bed. So, but assuming that there's actual soil in there and not just organic matter, it would be a great idea to send in a soil test and see what you're dealing with, because depending on what you filled it with, again, like you might have a pH that's out of whack. And if your pH is out of whack, the plants can't take up nutrients properly, and then you get not good growth. And that's especially concerning if you have multiple different crops in there and they're all doing poorly. Then we look at, okay, let's get that soil tested.
Yeah.
So the netting systems, I was talking with my group of master gardeners just last night, and we were talking about organic fruit production. And one of the things that we talked about are row covers, the netting things, and how it is so underutilized, even by these master gardeners who I've told to use these for years and years and years. But prevention of insects or fungal spores getting on your crop is the best thing that you can do. So the problem with squash is that they do need insects for pollination. So you can use the nets And then when they're in blossom, you have to open it up so the bees can get in there and stuff. But once your fruit is forming, you can close that back over and you can reduce the amount of squash bugs and stuff that get in there.
There you go. So use it. Try it out. See, I'm going to leave this, Diana, with Dot from Manitowoc, who called. And she suggested instead of hot dog eating contests that we should have broccoli eating contests. So if someone has one of those, let us know and we'll help publicize that. Thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
And thanks, Jill. Have a great day.
You too. And thanks for joining us today. Thanks to our team of Clara Neipert, Jill Patenaude, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins, and of course, Larry Mueller. Have a great weekend. Mm-hmm.